Welcome to another episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler, joined by Matt. And we got a two-parter here. We're going to do some transfer talk, incoming transfers and potential transfer targets for two of the teams that will be big-time contenders in the league this season. We're going to talk about VCU with George Templeton later in the show. But we're going to kick things off here with some SLU talk with the West Pine Bills guys. John and Dan, how are you gentlemen doing?
Doing well. How are you guys doing tonight?
We are great, John. You know, the transfer portal keeps on spinning. So we need to talk about a guy who jumped into the portal and then either jumped back out or got rejected by it. The nation's assist leader, Yuri Collins, 6 days after infuriating every St. Louis fan on Twitter, decides, I'm good. I'll come back. So I guess the first thing is just, what was your reaction when he came back? And were you more shocked when it first happened or when he returned?
Dan, you can start with this one. Before you get in and get more depth, I was actually taking a nap and I woke up to legitimately 50 text messages and I had no clue what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, my first reaction was kind of like, I couldn't believe it, honestly. I mean, we had heard a lot of rumblings before he had entered the portal. So it was kind of just seemed like a done deal that he was gone. And, it sucks, but you kind of start to move on and see, you know, who can we get, or like, what is the program going to look like next year and going forward, especially at the guard spot. And hearing that he came back, it was kind of just shocking. I mean, we expected him to go in after what we had heard, but there was nothing to say that he was going to come back to SLU. I know that, you know, people were angry when he went in and, you know, all this stuff. And that's kind of the way it is with the transfer portal now. But at the end of the day, I mean, we're so excited to have him back, to be able to watch him for at least one more year. I mean, he obviously runs the entire offense and it's just so important. The team feels like it's pretty much kind of built around his game too. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to not be excited that he's back. I mean, just the effect that he has on everybody is certainly positive in the program.
Yeah, and I would definitely echo all that. I think shock and kind of confusion just as the whole what transpired. Not to spoil anything, but we don't know any more or less than the rest of the world. So I kind of have a feeling that this is just going to be one of those great mysteries of college athletics where no one's really ever going to have a definitive answer on what happened. But I do know personally that it's a big relief that SLU's point guard position is going to have some stability for next year, because, you know, at this point in the transfer portal, even though there's almost 1500 guys in it, the one spot that you don't really see a lot of great players or even really solid players is point guard. And as you guys know, as people who cover the entire league, if you don't have a guy that you can trust to run your offense, they don't even have to be that good, but it's really hard for a team to win games. It's probably the most important position in the A-10 specifically. Point guards run this league, and I think that that's not a stretch to say.
I mean, we saw what happened to Duquesne when you have no point guard.
Yeah.
We saw what happened to George Mason, a really talented team that had below par point guards,
mm-hmm.
and ended up finishing ninth and getting bounced, scoring 50 points in their final game of the season against Fordham.
Yeah, and I think conversely, you can see what a high-quality point guard does. Like Dayton, their season really started to click once they got some stability at that position. VCU went on a really nice run once Ace Baldwin was back and healthy. A point guard can take you from a good team to a great team in this league. And I won't necessarily be one of the people that says Yuri is the X best point guard in this league, but I definitely think he's one of the five best. And I think that he makes a lot of things happen. You take the good with the bad, but he led the nation in assists for a reason. So we're happy, certainly. It takes it's one less spot that they have to fill, and especially because they're offering big men left and right. So it seems like the focus has been elsewhere for a long time.
Yeah, and we'll dive more into that in a little bit here. I feel like it's probably a waste of everybody's time for us to try to talk about the impact of Yuri Collins. We've seen him for 3 years. We get it by now. We know what he's going to do. So far more important question here. I'm going to need to hear everyone's best conspiracy theory for what happened to bring Yuri Collins back after just 6 days when it seemed like a done deal that he was going to Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, I think the general public consensus has been that something was worked out behind the scenes because of NIL money. There were some numbers floated specifically in relation to Tennessee. I don't know if I fully buy all of that stuff. My personal thing is that he had a place that he was looking to go. The playing time might have not necessarily been what it was expected to be. And I think the simple reality is that Travis Ford gives Yuri Collins an incredibly long leash to work with. He can make a lot of mistakes for SLU, and he's not going to get pulled out of the game. It might just be that simple. I don't know if there's a huge conspiracy here. There might be, but I don't know if I see it, honestly.
Right. I mean, the only thing Yuri can do that gets him taken out of games is get in foul trouble. I mean, we've seen him turn the ball over probably 5+ times in 10 minutes or at least the first half in some games. And, you know, he's still out there for as long as he can go in the second half. And, they just really don't have another option aside from him, at least at this point. So, yeah, I mean, the leash that he gets is so long that I really don't know that you're going to find a better situation, at least this year.
Yeah, and that might be the kind of unexciting answer, and it'd be really fun to say that SLU dropped a bag, specifically like Richard Chaffetz came, pulled up to Yuri's house in a Lamborghini with just a big sack of money with dollar signs on the back of it. But I don't know. I find it hard to believe that happened at SLU.
Or he could, really, maybe he just bought the company that was offering him the NIL money.
So that's this is dived into message board rumors and stuff. So Tennessee, it's pretty publicly, there's a company, Spire, that bankrolls their football team. And I think they're like a media company or something. There were some rumors, I'm not going to lie, I did go on Tennessee's board and read that the bags for basketball haven't been what they promised. I don't know if I believe that necessarily, but if Richard Chaffetz and his Chaffetz Group venture capital arm bought Spire Media, you know what? That's a fun little thing. So then I'm going to expect that SLU's football program is coming back next year and all of Tennessee's players are going to transfer. So I actually like that outcome better. So let's roll with that.
John, you're so close on what clearly happened. I fully believe the rumor that he was offered $200,000. Which would not have made sense considering that Tennessee is in on every good point guard in the portal. At some point, they're going to land one of them. So.
That's the thing. So, like, Tyrese Hunter from Iowa State just named his top five, and Tennessee's in it. And they landed, I think, Tyree Key over the weekend, who's more of a two-guard. Yep. But, like, you're right. They've been on every big guard. Our NIL deal's driving a lot of this movement for major schools. Yeah, probably. Let's call a spade a spade. I don't know if that $200,000 is reliable. I just from what people who are in the know have told us, and this is not really speculation. This is more getting in the land of like reality. I think it was a lot less than that. And maybe, I don't know, maybe the NIL deal during his courtship was a little higher than what it ended up being. I don't think we're ever going to find out. SLU's MO for a lot of this stuff is just don't talk about it.
And one thing I thought was really interesting about it too, like normally when a high profile player goes in the transfer portal, like within 24 hours you'll see like Jeff Goodman or somebody like so-and-so Yuri Collins tells me he's been contacted by, and it'll be like a list of 30 high major schools. I didn't see any news for Yuri, Like, he never tweeted out a list.
Yeah.
I didn't see any reporters or anything.
He said, didn't he say he said visits? I thought that I saw, or like he was.
Not publicly.
Okay. I saw from somebody that they listed like four schools. I know Tennessee wasn't in it, so I was surprised.
Yeah.
But they did list a handful, I thought. And I know Iowa State was in it. I don't know who else, but
yeah,
I'm not sure if it was official.
There were some names behind the scenes. I don't know. I'm very curious if someone's going to ask him about this after a game this year. Like, I'm very curious if that's going to happen. I don't think anyone's going to say anything about it, though. Like, I just, knowing SLU, and especially after, like, the COVID delay, or, like, a couple years ago when that game at Richmond got canceled and Richmond kind of went on a PR blitz and SLU just didn't say anything. If they didn't say anything about that, they're not saying anything about this. It's just kind of the, you know, it's like Fort Knox of information, but it's a mid-major school in St. Louis, Missouri.
If Zach Miller gets him one-on-one and he's possibly a little tipsy for it, I think he'd have the cojones to do it. That's probably about it.
I think there's plenty of people that would have the guts to do it, but I'm not sure you're going to see any of them at a Chaffetz post-game conference this year. Like, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe we can find a plant, like just a blogger that gets access to a post-game conference. I don't know. We'll see.
So we'll close out the Erie talk here. Because what I think at this point happened, their quarterback situation at Tennessee was kind of a disaster last year.
Okay.
So I think they went with a wide-ranging net of just Google hits for great passer. And that phrase was used so many times in respect to Yuri that they called him with the $200,000 offer. He got down there. They threw a set of pads on him, realized their mistake, and decided to drop a zero down to 20 grand. And at that point, he realized he was just better off going back to SLU because he can probably get something in the vicinity of that there.
Yeah, I mean,
if not more.
You know, maybe the pads didn't even go on because he's a generous 6 foot. So they might have seen him walk out of the Escalade and, you know, just said, oh, we can't have a sub 6 foot quarterback.
Kyler Murray, so.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the bigger thing is I think Yuri's like $165. Like, he's pretty light. Goes very untalked about. But yeah, you know, I like that idea, Tyler. That's more interesting than ours. Got nothing.
All right, so we'll move into the one transfer that you've picked up so far. Coming over from Missouri, the guard Javon Pickett scored 11 points a game last season. Didn't really do anything else particularly spectacularly. He was just kind of a volume scorer for a bad team. That's obviously not going to happen this year. He's now on a better squad. He's going to have to scrap for minutes, just given the multitude of good wings this team has. What's he going to bring to the table? How's he fit into the squad?
Yeah, so, you know, I've watched a little bit of Pickett. SLU was involved in his recruitment coming out of high school. It's a really odd comparison and kind of lazy considering they are from the same town and played against each other in high school, but he's like a worse version of Jordan Goodwin. I'm not going to call him as versatile, but he's a solid defender. He was a 3-year starter in the SEC. The only year he didn't really start games was his junior season. He does a little bit of everything well. He is much better in a low usage role, but I think the easiest term for him is just glue guy. He can do a lot of the things that Fred Thatch can do, and he's really tough. I mean, he's just a tough ass dude. And I don't know. I have no clue how much he's going to play on this team. He's certainly not going to sit on the bench the entire game. But what his role is going to be, people are predicting anywhere from he could start to he could be like the eighth man in the rotation. No one really knows.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a tough guy. He was playing like easily over 30 minutes, maybe even over 35 minutes down the stretch last season. Not that it really mattered for Mizzou. But certainly in conference play, I mean, he was on the floor pretty much the whole time. He's scoring in double figures pretty much all through conference. And I mean, that's against good teams. I mean, I think he just scored double figures against like Tennessee. He scored double figures against Kansas in non-con.
He was their leading scorer against Auburn when Mizzou took him down to the wire and lost on like the last possession of the game. He played really well in big games, and he has NCAA tournament experience to boot. So I know there were some national guys that after he committed, they were saying like, this is the move that cements SLU as a preseason top 25 team. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. And I know that, you know, we are big SLU hype men on Twitter. I think that this is a move that a team trying to make a tournament makes. And it's as simple as that. It's not going to move the needle for 90% of your games in the season, but he gets up for big games. And I think that that's very valuable on what SLU projects to be next year.
Right. Yeah. And I think he's kind of a guy who, I mean, he can defend one through maybe four at this point, certainly three.
In the 8-10, he can defend fours. He's 6'5", but he's very strong.
Right. I mean, he's strong. Again, he's very much like kind of Goodwin / Fred Thatch in kind of the way that he plays and the way that he gets his minutes. I mean, he's not a particularly great shooter. He doesn't really shoot a ton anyways. So yeah, he doesn't really have that dimension, but kind of everywhere else is kind of where he gets his bones.
Yeah, if he can replicate his junior season for Mizzou when he only played about 18 minutes a game, but with decent shooting splits, I think that that's like the best outcome for this move. Like he averaged 6 points on 50, 36, 86 shooting splits, like pretty solid for a guy that's playing 18 minutes a game.
Yeah, and so at this point, I haven't really seen Pickett play yet. I'm not an SEC fan and haven't gotten that far into my transfer scouting, but I am a big Ken Pom guy, especially in the offseason, and thought this was pretty funny. Some of the biggest similarity scores for his player profile, the junior and senior seasons for former Billiken Ash Yakubu and the senior season for Mike Crawford. So putting it into that context, I'm just curious how you would react to that. Would you be happy if he had one of those types of seasons? Because I know those were some of the better players on some really bad Jim Crews teams. But
So
would that be a good fit?
We were at SLU for all three of those seasons. So we saw them up close and personal. I personally would take all three of those. They were good players on bad teams. So hopefully the team outcome is a lot better than that. But those guys would have played on winning teams. So I'm pretty good with those similarity scores. I think Dan, Danny is more of a Bart Torvik guy than I am. I'm more of a Ken Pom person, but I think when he initially was in the portal by like Porpogatu, which is like his player efficiency rating, he was like top 100. I think you said, Dan, like, he was like one of the better transfers that was out there.
Yeah, he's up there. I mean, he last year, his Porpogatu was 2.1, which is really solid. I mean, it's nothing spectacular, but it's certainly not a bad player. And on a bad team in the SEC, I mean, that's pretty good, if we're being honest. So, I mean, is he going to make this like a world of difference? Probably not a ton. But again, he's someone that you look to be able to get you through certain periods of, you know, tough games and just to kind of get you over the line at the end or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, we really like the pickup, at least from what we've talked about. And yeah, I mean, if you took 2016 Ash Yakubu and you put him on this team as, you know, the sixth man, seventh man, I think he does really well. I think part of those guys, being on bad teams was one of them, but they were guys that you probably don't want taking like 30% of possessions or 25% of possessions. So, if he could be effective like they were, I think it's a great fit.
Yeah, and I will say too, just based on some of the visits that SLU has lined up, I know that we were talking Pickett, but like, I think they're going to land a pretty reasonably talented power forward, whether it's a stretch four or more of a bruiser, I don't know, But I think the talk that like Fred Thatch or Javon Pickett is going to start next year is probably a little optimistic. I think they're going to land someone who fits that role a little cleaner, and they can let these guys be dedicated bench players who just have a very specific purpose. And I think that's a good thing. I think that when your program gets to that point, you're in a pretty decent spot, especially for the A-10 level.
So that's where we're going to go here anyway. You got Collins at point guard. You got Francis Okoro at center. Neither of them really have a backup. In between, there's a ton of wing options between Pickett, Gibson, Jimerson, the now supposedly healthy Javonte Perkins, Fred Thatch, Terrence Hargrove. So to me, I figured that Thatch and Hargrove would still end up getting most of the minutes at power forward, given that then that kind of leaves you with two spots to split between Perkins, Jimerson, Pickett. There's not exactly much left to go around there. Knowing Travis Ford, he was certainly going to find another big man that he could play with Okoro occasionally because he loves doing that kind of stuff. So where do they go from here? Who is maybe someone that you've heard that they have their eye on, someone that you feel like could be a really good pickup so that if our listeners see a week from now, oh, SLU picked up this guy from Conference USA, this is a great pickup.
Yeah, so I think the first place to start with that is they had on campus last Friday Andrew Carr from Delaware, who Davidson and VCU in the A-10 are also recruiting. He is a really good shooting stretch four, good three-point numbers, had a really good first 2 years at Delaware, but he'd still have 3 years of eligibility. He can play some center, but he is much more effective as a stretch four. The way that his recruitment is shaking out, it looks like it's going to be Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, and SLU as his top three. I really wouldn't be surprised to see him as a Billiken by the end of this week. Not sure when this episode's coming out, but I think that there's a better than not chance that he becomes a Billiken by the end of this week. Another guy to keep your eye on is Davian Bradford from Kansas State. Kind of similar to Francis Okoro in terms of production at a higher conference level, but he is a local, so he was involved in his recruitment out of high school, more of a back-to-the-basket guy. I don't know if they're going to get him on campus, but I wouldn't be surprised for them to hit him hard. And then there's a guy from France, Mael Crispin. I don't actually know if that's how you say it, but he just set up an official visit next weekend, the first weekend of May. Or I guess 2 weekends from now. St. Mary's is also involved there in a third school that's escaping me. Don't know a ton about him, but in typical Euro big fashion, it's if he was an American, he'd be ranked a 4-star. So lump him in with every other European player that has ever existed. Mm-hmm. I don't really know anything other than that. I mean, Dan, has there anyone they've been linked with really? It seems like they're going for more stretch fours than back to the basket guys. But then again, like a great example is Martin Linson is a guy that wasn't even on SLU's radar and then just all of a sudden was a Billiken a couple years ago. So like this staff does a lot of their work just in the dark and you don't find out about it until like the day before someone commits.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say that I think you got all the names that I had. Yeah, I mean, looking at the portal, there's a ton of names that we can talk about and that we would love to see come and play in a SLU uniform. But a lot of them, number one, aren't realistic, or number two, SLU probably hasn't even looked. So, yeah, I mean, those are probably – I think those are all the names that we have. Those are all the ones that I can think of. But I think they're all good fits in their own kind of individual way. Yeah, but I mean, there's just so many guys out there that it's really tough to say for sure, you know, kind of what direction they want to go.
Yeah, and I would add there are a couple more names that they've talked to, but aren't public yet. And like, we don't fully know how much it can be relied upon or not. But I will say this is a tease. Like they're looking heavily at people from Europe. And it's not like just one other person. Like they're trying to establish some kind of pipeline there, considering Ray Giacoletti, who used to be on staff at Gonzaga, has like extensive connections in Europe. So honestly, with one of their open three scholarships, I wouldn't be surprised to see it be a European player. Whether they're an immediate contributor or not, I'll have no idea. It's really hard to find information on European guys. They just don't get the same coverage that we get in America on the prep circuit. So I'm confident that they're going to land a contributor or two from this group. I think that there's a lot of there's a really desirable thing that they can offer next year as a team that, if everything goes right, should be an NCAA tournament team. So, you know, how much playing time they're going to have to offer is going to be dependent mainly on foul trouble for their starters. I mean, one of the things with Yuri Collins and Francis Okor returning that's great is, like, you have good people at those positions, but it's hard to offer a ton of playing time. Francis Okoro, if he's not in foul trouble, he's playing 35 minutes a night.
Yeah, well, Francis Okoro going to be in foul trouble a fair amount, so.
Yeah, he is. But interestingly enough, his fouls did go down in conference with more playing time. Like, I think it's a thing for him that he just needs run, and he plays better defense. It's very odd. I can't really figure it out, but I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe Kenneth Lofton Jr. will commit tomorrow, and then I'll look like an idiot. And then Trey Mitchell is going to come too. Tony Bergeron's going to come, and the Dobo position just opened up at SLU, so maybe he's going to become the new director of basketball operations. I don't think so. I think Tony Bergeron is going to go to whatever school Jared Grasso is at. I think that he's gonna join the staff, whether it's at Bryant or Fordham. That just seems like a match made in heaven.
Yeah, we'll see. But
the most accomplished guy on that list, Andrew Carr, for context for people, top 100 nationally in true shooting percentage last year. So
yeah,
really efficient guy, shot 40% from two on the, or shot 60% from two on the season.
Yeah. And I do want to say Andrew Carr, like, so we're very notably, and we talk very openly on Twitter about this, about our fear of Belk Arena, just because of how many times that Davidson has just shot 7,000% from three against SLU. When they first started recruiting Andrew Carr, before they got that transfer from Buffalo, whose name escapes me, I was 100% convinced that he was going there, and I was 100% convinced he was going to drop 37 points on SLU this year. So apparently that's not going to happen anymore. So I would really like it if we could have him return the favor just one time in my life.
Well, I want to jump in with some breaking news. There is one big man that St. Louis will not land from the portal. Mulay Sissoko to the North Texas Mean Green. So officially off the market.
Interesting.
He can make the tournament.
I don't follow Dayton, obviously, as much as you guys do. But, like, should he have played more or not? Because really. It seemed like, because he was the guy who redshirted the year Obi was there, right? Mm-hmm. That everyone wanted to play, or I couldn't really tell.
He served a good purpose on the team. I think when you've got the best freshman in the conference at the same position, and then another couple good big men that can fill in at the five, there just wasn't really a spot for him. But I am excited to see what he can do. Like, if you look at his raw efficiency numbers, he was one of the highest in the conference, just didn't play a lot of minutes though. But I think he could do well with more playing time. So we will see. But last thing to wrap it up, in typical John Rothstein fashion, he has proclaimed that the Atlantic 10 goes through Chaffetz Arena. So I just want to know at this point, with Yuri Collins coming back, if St. Louis gets another transfer to play the four or five, as you guys are hoping for, is that the expectation? Is it conference championship or bust?
Dan, you can start, because I don't know if we're going to agree on this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'd like to think that it is. I'm not sure that it's actually conference championship or bust, but I do think, and we have spoken about this, I do think that it's NCAA tournament or bust. As great as it is to win, you know, the A-10, whether it be the regular season or the tournament, and how much that can help your seeding, I mean, I think we're all kind of on board with just give me the tournament. Like, just give me the March Madness. Give us a don't even know, a semi-respectable seed would be great. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for. Whether or not the Atlantic 10 actually runs through St. Louis, it's tough to say. Loyola's going to be tough. Dayton's obviously going to be tough. ECU's tough. There's so many good players, it feels like, going to, you know, schools all over the conference, that I think it's going to be really competitive. And while I do think that at this point, and assuming, you know, another transfer or two, that SLU has one of the better rosters, I mean, you know, it's tough to really say who the favorite is, especially when we're not 100% sure how healthy Javonte Perkins is going to look in November. And hopefully by the time January rolls around, he's definitely 100%, but you know, it's just something we can't say for sure.
Yeah. And I echo most of that. I think it's bitter bust to start. I don't particularly care who wins the conference. I don't know if that's really a hot take. I want it to be my team, but I don't really care. In the sense,
I want that NIT auto bid.
No, I don't want to be in the NIT for the third straight year. It's pain. It is the ultimate form of pain. Like, shout out to NIT Stu. Your enthusiasm for the tournament is great. I don't know how you do it, but the NCAA tournament is the goal. I think next year is shaping up to be the best year the Atlantic 10 has had in, I mean, I don't even know.
In this iteration.
In this iteration. And I think it's hard to say that the conference goes through any particular gym except for Tom Golo Arena. So, you know, everyone's fighting for second place right now.
The A-10 actually goes through Philadelphia, because any loss in there will just be devastating.
Yeah.
To a title chance, or an at-large bid chance.
They are truly the linchpin for this conference. They hold the fate of this league in their hands, and apparently are going to do it with like two players, because I don't think a single person's committed to Dunphy yet.
Anwar Gill came back, so that kind of...
Yeah, it's like a half count. I mean, like, I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic that the bottom of the league is going to be much improved. Like, I don't think there's going to be a team that's like the
middle of the league is.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Well, actually, Duquesne's going to stink, so never mind.
Yeah, I'm not going to say the bottom of the league will be better until LaSalle and Duquesne have enough warm bodies to feel the starting
and Joe's
lineup.
And GW. Yeah.
Joe's... Yeah. Joe's a hot topic. They're getting a lot of guys, but Billy Lang driving the bus is not exactly... It's kind of like a Bonaventure bus driver. Very, very suspect.
All right. I think we just have to close it right there. John and Dan from West Pine Bills, where can everybody find your fantastic Twitter commentary?
You can find us at West Pine Bills. You can also find us randomly spewing off thoughts in the Billiken Discord. I don't know where the link to that is, but it's a fun place getting off Twitter. But we also do a podcast like every like 16 weeks or so. We decide to record an episode. So check us out on Spotify, the West Pine Bills Show. We'll eventually be on other platforms, but we're just too lazy to get around to it. So West Pine Bills on all platforms.
All right. Thank you guys for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Now we're going to talk VCU. We're joined by George Templeton from the Rams Rewind to talk about their incoming players. George, thank you for coming on the show.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you conduct a VCU podcast yourself. So we got to go to the source here. And I think we got to start with the two names that have been thrown about the most, the Michigan men who are entering VCU. And we'll kick things off with Zeb Jackson, former top 100 recruit. He was at Michigan for 2 years, got screwed up by COVID, both the team losing games and he himself losing games. Now comes to VCU as a kind of a buy low asset here. What do you think we're going to see from him this year?
I think there's opportunity. I think there's a lot of opportunity in that backcourt. So I'm kind of excited about him coming, because it's kind of on the down low, but with Vince Williams definitely not coming back, and some questions that about our roster. I think that our roster depth at guard with Marcus Sahonis transferring, I kind of look at that opportunity for VCU, and I think it's a very good one. I think it's that Zeb Jackson is somebody that can absolutely get some minutes and play a role. And for this coaching staff's sake, it kind of needs to happen, because the last couple of years, the transfers haven't gone as well. And even though we've had some really good freshmen come in, Jalen Deloach, Jaden Nunn, I thought were terrific last year. You know, for a program that, and a coach that talks about, well, we're the Army and we have an Army and we're going to play 10, 11 guys. They weren't playing many guys at the end of the season this year, and it showed. I think it absolutely told in those last few key games where they weren't able to get the results they needed, and they ended up getting knocked out in the second round of the NIT. So I look at Zeb Jackson as somebody that's a required – that ought to be a required player, somebody who gets a lot of minutes. It's kind of bizarre what happened to him at Michigan this past year, because he only played the four games. The last two games he played 15 minutes, and it's in December, and you're thinking, okay – he's going to start to get in the rotation and nothing. But there was no enmity coming from Michigan. The coach had nice things to say about him when he decided to transfer. So that makes me feel good. I just hope that he can slot in and he can be a good defender. Because, again, if you're not going to be a good defender, you're not going to play in this team. Because that's the thing we hang our hat on the most. And that's the thing that kind of went away at the end of the season, unfortunately.
And to me, I trust this a little bit more, because you never know with a former top 100 guy when it goes wrong. Was it something with his attitude? Was he a victim of circumstance? But the Martelli connection is what makes me believe here. Obviously spent the last 2 years under the watchful eye of Phil Martelli, the associate head coach at Michigan. Phil's son, Jimmy, is the director of basketball operations at VCU. And that's a family business, the Martelli coaching tree. He's got another brother over at Niagara. You know that his dad is not going to send a tarnished player over to one of his children, because I assume that Jimmy was probably responsible for getting the inside scouting report on this guy.
Yeah, and I have to say, Jimmy Martelli is primarily responsible for getting our non-conference schedule. He did a great job of that last year, so – you know, I imagine his reputation is starting to grow with other coaches and stuff like that. And I hope he stays for a while at VCU before he eventually moves on. But, yeah, I think based on that, that also makes me feel good, because, yeah, Phil Martelli knows the A-10 better than anybody, so he knows what kind of players are going to be successful there.
Yeah, and so going over to the other Michigan transfer, a little bit of a different mold. You have Brandon Johns, who's a 6'8 grad student who – unlike Zeb Jackson, he's actually played quite a few games for the Wolverines, averaged just about 12 minutes last season, got significant minutes when they were a one seed 2 seasons ago. So more experience of a player. Do you think, as, you know, 6'8", he's going to be one of the taller Rams? Do you think he'll have that opportunity with some of the inside players like Vince Williams and Hassan Ward moving on?
No, there's no doubt about it. I think he slots right in as a power forward, because I kind of look at Jalen Deloach as this next year's center, and maybe Christian Fermin too. I know we're going to talk about in a little bit, but Brandon Johns is like Levi Stockard. Again, played 4 years, a bruiser. You know, hopefully he can be a bit of a better offensive player than Levi Stockard was at times for VCU, but it's certainly something we need, because again, we're not blessed with great depth in the front court, especially in those two positions, power forward and center, now that Hassan Ward's gone. And that transfer's kind of tough, because he's such a great defensive player, but his offensive game didn't develop. So why did he transfer? Was it because he felt like he couldn't develop at VCU and he had to go somewhere else, which is kind of what happened with Marcos Santos Silva? Same thing. He transferred because maybe his offensive game wasn't developing to the manner that it should. Or was it, you know, he wasn't working on it? That's one of those things that's kind of puzzling a lot of us in VCU fan land over here about why that happened. So Brandon Johns, again, another player that there is opportunity, or there's a lot of opportunity, and he ought to get a lot of quality minutes just as the state of the roster is right now.
So right now, VCU's in an interesting spot. They have a lot of talented guys and really kind of no clear rotation roles. So I think we'll start on the wing here. You got to replace Keyshawn Curry and Vince Williams. You got three guys coming back, Jaden Nunn, Josh Banks, and Nick Kern, who all played anywhere from huge minutes for Nunn to sparingly for the other two. As we mentioned, you bring in Zeb Jackson. You bring in a top 100 recruit in Alfonso Billups, and Jameer Watkins is now back from his injury. So alongside Ace Baldwin, how do you see these six kind of wings fitting together? Who's going to be the defensive ace this year? Are there any guys that you think could play really well together, et cetera?
Jameer Watkins is the key, because before he got hurt last year, I was ready for him to make the leap that Vince Williams made, where he went from being a good player to third team all conference. I thought Jameer Watkins was going to do the same thing last year. Then he gets hurt. Now they did great with Ace Baldwin's Rico from the Achilles injury, better than, at least in my opinion, anybody could have ever possibly hoped for. So I'm kind of hoping that we get something like that again, even though that seems like it's almost once in a lifetime that somebody could come back from an injury and be that good. For me, Watkins is the three for sure, and Nate Nunn starts as the two, but I think we're going to see a lot of three-guard lineups this year, maybe. We may see VCU try to get back to kind of the old Havoc thing, and we might see three guards and Watkins playing some four and trying to play really, really fast. Maybe not against Dayton with Holmes, because that's probably not a good idea, but maybe in a lot of other situations like that. My hope is that seeing it what happened at the end of the season and seeing them shorten the rotation as much as they did, and it didn't work, you know, lost the St. Louis game when they had everything on the line, lost to Richmond in the conference tournament fairly embarrassingly, and then get, you know, knocked out in round two at Wake Forest and not play a really good game at all there. My hope is that we're going to get back to just not just that suffocating defense, but playing the 10 or 11 guys and wearing teams down, because that's what we do. That's what we do best. That's the way we play best. And I don't know why we went away from it at the end of the season. So for me, Watkins is the key. And I think if things are going well, Ace one, Nunn two, Watkins three, that's how that starts. But these other guys get in here and get plenty of time as well. And we'll see a lot of three guard and small lineups this year. I think we'll see plenty of that.
Do you think Watkins or maybe somebody else could replace the bulk of Vince Williams scoring, averaging 15, 16 points a game? Or do you think it'll be a much more evenly spread out attack where, you know, I'm looking at the 2018-19 VCU team, which is the last edition of their AMs to make it to the tournament. And really, besides Marcus Evans averaging 13 points a game, like, nobody really stood out. So do you think we could see something more similar to that this year, as opposed to just, like, replacing one big scorer?
I will say, we might see Ace, who I like Ace to be the conductor of the orchestra, you know, run the offense, get the assists, set everybody up. That's the best version of Ace Baldwin to me. But we may end up seeing him try to play a few instruments as well and be that scoring end and shooting guard. Because, look, he worked on his shot. That's all he did when he was laid up with the Achilles injury, was work on his shot. Literally, that's it. And you saw that it paid dividends. He shot the ball great from outside. His offensive game was a little more varied when he came back. I think Ace is gonna have to take some of that burden, but I think it can be spread out among Watkins, Nunn, and these other guys that are coming in. I think that's going to have to be the case, and I expect it to be. And Jaden Nunn, you know, he was really good in the early part of the season, especially when he played point guard. He did better than what I would have thought at that point. And then he kind of struggled when he had to play point guard and if Ace was sitting on the sideline with fouls. I think Jaden Nunn's offensive game develops. I think he becomes more of a big-time scoring guy. Maybe that's who it is. Maybe he's the one that gets to 15 or 16 points a game this year to try to fill what we're going to miss with not having Vince Williams.
Yeah, and the Rams have so many potentially good scoring options this year that it's really not that difficult to find a path to an at least slightly above average offense, where maybe it's Nunn, maybe it's Watkins, maybe it's Zeb Jackson, but it just feels like somebody is going to pick up some of that slack. Now, if VCU can continue to stay at that level, they can be really good as long as the defense stays elite. They lost Williams, they lost Curry, they lost Hassan Ward. So outside of Ace Baldwin, who do you trust to be kind of that next go-to defender anywhere on this roster.
It may be the freshman. It may be Christian Fermin. I think a lot of people look at him and Deloach too, because I think Deloach struggled defensively early, and I thought as the season went on, he got a lot better at that end of the floor. And I think either one or both of them is an anchor, especially next to Johns. If Johns is going to be slotting in, say, the power forward, I think that's where you're looking to try to keep that defensive intensity. One point I want to make about VCU's offense, they actually ended up pretty high in terms of field goal percentage in the country this year. I think they were in the 60s in that, and you wouldn't expect that for a team that struggled on offense like they did. And they did all right in terms of three-point percentage, which, again, you don't expect because that's not typical of VCU. There's only one reason their offense stunk this year. They were in the bottom about 35 or 40 in turnovers. So that's it. If they could just not turn the ball over in games and be about, you know, 10 or 11 turnovers a game or 12, they would have been a much better offense than what they were last year. So to me, that's the thing is Coach Rhodes has got to – that's got to be Coach Rhodes and saying, you know what, you got to be calm, you got to take your time, use the clock. When this team tries to play too fast on offense, it just doesn't work. Their brains go too fast for their bodies, like a lot of young players do. So that's the thing I would really harp on there. I don't expect us to be as good defensively. I mean, they were a top five defensive team for literally the entire season, or at least from the point I started tracking it, which was about 10 games in. That's hard. I think typically there you're going to be about 15 to 20 if you're doing really well for a team like what VCU is. So you're absolutely right. They're going to have to pick it up offensive efficiency-wise if they're going to try to be a team that's right around, you know, that at-large, that those last few at-large spots are even better than that.
Well, I mean, when even then, though, like, when we're talking about VCU regressing on defense and it's still an idea of, oh, they could be like a top 15, 20 team, I think that speaks to the defensive culture that Mike Rhodes has brought to VCU. And really, that is the key, I think. Just, you know, can some of these newer guys step up? But one other question I had before we wrap it up. You mentioned Christian Fermin coming in as a four-star center, and then also the development of Deloach throughout the season as he got better on offense. What did you think about the departure of Hassan Ward? Because this was something that I think got a lot of buzz around the A-10 community. He's a pretty high-profile player after a really good sophomore season. I feel like VCU has some pretty capable replacements, and we really didn't see Ward do a whole lot on offense last year. I know he also dealt with a couple injuries. So do you expect any sort of drop-off at the center position, or are you expecting a lot from these other guys?
I think defensively you have to expect a little right now because, again, Ward's up there in blocks nationwide. And there were patches that weren't good. Like Ward didn't play well in the Bahamas, and an injury was part of that. And then he sat a few games. And then there were just some other stretches of games where you're like, who is this guy? And what did you do with Hassan Ward? My big thing was offensively, he didn't develop at all. And that's the question a lot of us have here is that the coaching staff or is that him? Because one thing, when I was going through our transfer history, most of the people that are transferring out of VCU, they're all big guys. They're all 6'8", 6'9", guys. So, you know, does this coaching staff have a weakness with developing those kind of players? And is that an issue? Is that really our problem? So, I mean, for me, he comes with huge wraps on him, and I can't wait to see him. But, again, you're talking about replacing one of the better defensive players in the conference who was an all-conference defensive player as a sophomore, and, you know, probably just missed being one this past season with a freshman. I think that's a lot to ask. I don't care who it is. You hope Brandon Johns can pick some of that up as well, and I think that's going to be the key. VCU's it's a fascinating team because where they were going into the last game of the season with a chance to win the conference, be the number one seed, and then have it go as badly as it did, it kind of leaves you – just sort of wondering where are we really at when we get to October? And, of course, a lot of that's going to depend on these guys coming back from the big injuries.
Yeah, so you still got a few more scholarships to play with here. Got some kind of minor holes on the roster at this point. Is there anybody in the transfer portal that either you've heard rumors about or you're just kind of taking a shot in the dark, a guy you would love to have who's somebody that fans should be excited for VCU if they get here in the next week or two?
I that's the funny thing is there's been a lot of it's been mostly quiet with the transfer portal. And so, you know, we have – there were the Zeb Jackson thing was percolating beforehand. The Johns thing kind of came out of nowhere. And so, I mean, honestly, I'm looking for another big guy. I'm looking for another big guys if we could get one. As I'm looking through here, there's an Oregon center that's 6'10". Somebody like that. Frank Kepnang, that's his name.
Yeah, the somebody guys like that.
We really need front court depth. You know, I was disappointed to see Hassan go, even with the criticisms about his lack of development on offense last year. And I want to be in a situation, and part of it is I'm thinking of Dayton. We all know what Daron Holmes is going to turn into if he's not there already. I mean, Daron Holmes is a serious problem for the rest of us. And a lot of this conference is going to be trying to figure out how to deal with him. And that's going to be what a lot of people are focused on. And I don't feel any differently. You know, we've got to be ready for what he can bring. We got to be ready for St. Louis's front court. The very best teams in this league that we're looking at, Davidson, Dayton, St. Louis, they all got front courts that are tip top. And so I think that's where VCU is going to have to get better, or we're going to be in that bracket behind those three teams. And that's, for me, that's the top bracket right now.
All right. So another center coming up for the Rams. George, thank you for breaking down the roster with us. Where can everybody find your fine work?
Appreciate you for having me on. You can follow me on Twitter at TempTheRat and VCU Rams Rewind on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, various things. It's mainly a post-game show. That's what it is. I just sit there after the game, or in some cases, if I have to work, I'll listen to the game and then rewatch it later and then break it down, because it's one thing listening to the game. It's completely different watching it over again, because there's certain things that like – When they played Dayton and Dayton, that last play sounded one way on the radio, and it was an absolute heart attack watching it on TV, because I still can't believe Hassan Warren batted that pass away, as a for instance. Not to bring up a sore spot for you guys. You know, that didn't trip. Radio and TV was not the same, believe me, watching that last play over again. So that's what we do. It was not – I just did it for fun in a fan group, and then somebody said turn it into a podcast, so that's what happened.
All right, everybody, go follow George. Be sure to tune into the Rams Rewind. Maybe not quite now, but come November, you're going to want to listen. Thank you for coming on. And thank you all for listening to today's episode of the 3-Bid League Podcast. We will be back in the next few days with a part two transfer pod, talking about Davidson and George Mason. So keep an eye out for that. If you enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a review on there if you have any comments. Everybody, enjoy the portal. It makes Twitter fun. It makes the day more interesting.